When I awoke, I had no idea how much time had passed, but I felt better. I sat up and ate my bag of M&Ms and drank the rest of my water. I felt surprisingly refreshed. Not expecting any alteration in circumstances, I nevertheless resumed trying to pick the lock. This time, I succeeded almost right away. Don't ask me why. If there had been a combustion engine involved, I might have guessed it was because the carburetor had been flooded. The real explanation was probably something closer to the pickle jar axiom. You know, you're trying and trying unsuccessfully to twist the lid off a pickle jar. Then, when you finally give up and hand it to someone else to try, the next simple twist opens it with ease. With the pins in alignment, the tumbler had turned 90 degrees. Using the torsion bar, I continued turning until the latch was thrown. I swung the door open on its hinges. It emitted one long jailhouse creak that was part spine tingler and part nails screeching on a blackboard. Nevertheless, it was music to my ears. I stood up, carefully keeping hold of the door so there was no possibility of it closing again. I stepped through, but still, out of an abundance of caution, I didn't let the door close, but inserted the rubber door wedge to keep it from latching. I then dropped to my hands and knees, placed my head near the floor, and tried to peer all the way up the passage to the top of the incline. At the far end, I could make out an illuminated red exit sign. So I now knew I had a way out. I removed the rubber wedge and allowed the door hinges to sing out a last metallic banshee cry before the latch was once again re-engaged. Quickly advancing up the ramp, I could dimly make out shadowy openings going by on both my left and my right. I did a quick flick of the flashlight to see what their purpose was. As I suspected, storage. This particular chamber was packed with a battalion of folding chairs stacked on dollies, all biding their time until graduation day. As I approached the next opening, I detected the familiar odor of mildewing canvas. It reminded me of Cedar Tree, my Aunt Ruth's summer cottage, especially the room where the sails and life preservers were kept. I didn't bother looking. I doubted I would find any sails, more likely tents and awnings. As I neared the end of the shaft, the red glow from the exit sign cast enough light that I could easily see what was contained in the final bays on either side. Motorized carts, snow blowers, lawnmowers, hedge trimmers. There was also the hedgerow ladder on dollies that workmen used to surmount the hedges. The air was redolent with the smell of oil and gasoline, and there were dark circles of greasy tire tracks laid down on the granite floor where the machinery had executed U-turns to pass through the double set of crash bar doors located on my right. Those doors were chained and padlocked and of no interest to me. When I reached the door beneath the exit sign, I carefully and quietly opened it. The room on the other side was also dark. Entering, I had to step over a metal lip and onto a smooth cement floor. Once again, I called upon my trusty flashlight. Its dwindling batteries made a feeble but heroic effort to cast a beam ahead of me. Barely enough to see by, but still sufficient to reveal exactly where I was. I was back in the rowing room beneath Low Library. The weak illumination bounced off the surface of the twin water tanks, throwing a wavering reflection on the far wall, while at the same time highlighting the stationary rowing shell between them, with its 8 long oars poised in the air, now resembling a giant dead cockroach lying on its back. The flashlight gave out entirely, but the unpleasant image lingered on my retinas longer than I would have preferred. I was ready to count myself lucky and call it a night. Might as well. The trail was cold, the footsteps had fizzled out, and there were too many directions the stalker could have taken out of this roundhouse of a room. I ascended the metal steps to the catwalk, and when I did, I reached for the same light switch Monica had turned on weeks before. The overhead lights lit up the painted cement floor. Looking down, I could see 2 faint trails of footprints emerging from the door I had just come through. One set was mine, curving to the base of the steps I had just come up. The other set was the stalker's, which strode purposefully across the room to the opposite door. They weren't wet shoe prints at all, but rather less distinct patterns laid down by the oil and grease residue that our souls had picked up as we passed through the motor bays. My mind held a quick town hall meeting wherein the issue was hotly debated between my desire to call it a night versus my freshly aroused bloodhound instincts. The bloodhound won out.